We've been doing our series on He Is Here, and this is our fourth one. You can see here we've been looking at in the valley, in the wilderness, in the storm, and always. And this is really just in the Advent season, in preparation of our heart and minds for Christmas, and doing that by reflecting on this tagline, He Is Here, and the ways in which that is witnessed in our human experience. And probably the first three have been true of that: in the valley, in the wilderness, and in the storm. So in the first one, we looked at talking about in the valley of despair, in the darkest valley, in the valley of discontent, and also in the valley of discipleship. That's not often thought of as a valley, but if you missed that message, the valley of discipleship, sometimes it's just tough to be a Christian. It's tough to be a follower of Jesus. And so sometimes we find ourselves in all sorts of valleys. The second one was looking at meeting God in the wilderness. And that's a theme all the way through the Old Testament with the children of Israel. And it's repeated into the New Testament, where we meet with God in the wilderness. And also, we don't only meet with God in the wilderness, but God reveals our hearts in the wilderness. Deuteronomy 8 verse 2 talks about humbling you and testing you to prove your character and to find out whether or not you'll obey His commands. It's some of those wilderness experiences of life that we have deep encounters with God, but also it's a revelation of our own heart, and it can be really humbling and also a test of our own character. Last week we're looking at He Is Here in the storm, and we looked mostly at Mark 6, don't be afraid, take courage, I am here. And again, a reminder, that was with the disciples in one of the storms that we witnessed, but not so much the disciples' response to that, but Jesus' response to the storm of life, understanding that was a day He received news of His friend John the Baptist being beheaded, Herod wanting to take Jesus out as well, the disciples not getting what Jesus was on about, as revealed through the feeding of the 5,000. You remember, they'd just come back from doing miracle after miracle. They'd just been sprouting off all that they'd been doing with Jesus. And so when they pointed out to Him that this mob out there that were needing feeding, He simply said to them, well, you do it. It's like, haven't got enough to eat. They weren't getting it. So this was the theme out of Mark 6. Don't be afraid, take courage. It is I. And Jesus' response in that was He served people. He met with God. He modeled resilience. He made reasoned decisions, and He continued to provide grace, even though He was being smashed on so many different levels. He was just continuing to provide grace. And I was meeting with someone during the week that were going through a real-life storm, and they were saying, look, out of last week, I just picked up on what you said about even in the storms of life, rather than looking at us and our experience and how bad that is, that we actually look outside of ourselves just like Jesus did. And so that was their story to me, is that in the midst of their storm, which they are in very much this week, they're looking outside of themselves to being able to serve people. So that's where we've been. And today we're looking at He Is Here Always. We've been some pretty interesting places, and whether it's the Kimberleys or up in Kakadu and Arnhem Land, all over the shop. But you come across these little signatures, such and such was here. Yeah, you come across those? You know, Fred was here or Mary was here. It's like, why do I need to know that you are here? Does your name really have any significance that I'm in all sorts of different places? Well, you've already seen it. You remember this one. This is actually not some young person that's created this. This was actually our war heroes from First World War. This was a signature tag that they dropped all the way through Europe, particularly on the trains, in their camps, and all across Europe. The Americans tried to copy it in the Second World War. They've got, I think theirs is Kilroy. But Fu was the original one. And he appears all over the place, even in Adelaide. Fu was here. And all sorts of, you know, these was here. Even Gandalf gets a mention. But the thing is, with all of those, it was. And our tagline is, Jesus is here. He is here. He's not was. He is here. And all the way through the scriptures, there's this story of Jesus and His being with others. Joshua chapter 1 verse 9, obviously not referring to Jesus, is God is saying, have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous. Do not be frightened or be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. Now that's before he's got skin on. That's before the manger scene. There's a description there of don't be frightened, don't be afraid, I will be with you wherever you go. Then you have Isaiah 41:10, fear not, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will help you. I will uphold you with my right hand. Then you come into the New Testament, and you see passages like Matthew 1:23. The virgin will conceive a child, and she will give birth to a son, and they will call his name Emmanuel, which means God with us. He is here. And then you have Matthew chapter 28. This is after Jesus' life and his death and his burial and his resurrection. And the promise that he gives to the church is teach these things to his disciples to obey all the commands that I have given you, and be sure of this, I will be with you always, even to the end of the age. So right at the beginning of the Gospel of Matthew, we're reminded that in the Christ child, God is with us. And then at the finish of the book of Matthew, we have the reminder, post the resurrection of Jesus, I will be with you, not just now, but always. And then you have this wonderful chapter in the Gospel of John. And John's in the book there. You find no genealogies there, but he puts in a different, genealogy. People are into genealogies now, aren't you? You're trying to work out your family tree. Well, if you want to work out the family tree of Jesus, you go to Matthew and Luke, but you won't find any family tree in John. You won't find any manger scene. You won't find any innkeeper. You won't find any of that taking place. You do find a genealogy because John chapter 1 begins with the words, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. What does that remind you of? Genesis chapter 1. There's John's genealogy. He uses the same language as Genesis chapter 1. In the beginning, God. John picks up on that, repeats it in John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, Jesus, and the Word was God. And then we have this wonderful text, and the Word, Jesus, became flesh and dwelt among us, and we have seen his glory, glory as of the only Son from the Father, full of grace and truth. It's the only time that word is used in the New Testament, dwelt among us. It's the idea of tabernacled. It's only John that uses it. And for the Jew, he's thinking of how God had dwelt with them in the Old Testament. In the tabernacle was the Shekinah glory of God. In the wilderness experience, you have God present with them in the cloud during the day and the fire at night time. And so this whole idea that John has is that God tabernacles with us. He is here with us. It is, we use the phrase God with skin on. Eugene Peterson in the Message paraphrase, he says the Word, that's Jesus, became flesh and blood and moved into our neighborhood. I like that. I don't know what your neighborhood's like, but my neighborhood needs more of Jesus, which would be a good thing. And our world as a neighborhood needs more of Jesus. We have God here with us always. He was the visible expression of the invisible God. He was expressing himself in a language that we could understand. We could see him. We could hear of him. We could understand what he was. God was identifying himself with our frailties and tragedies of the human race. He was getting up close and personal. And he is here always. But what does that mean? What does that mean for us? John writes this book later in his life. And he's had a number of years to think about this. And the way he writes, he gives us this wonderful image of who Jesus is. You see, it's one thing for us to understand he is here always, but what does that look like for us? What does that really mean? How do you put legs onto that he's here always? And so John actually records for us seven statements, and you'd be familiar with them. It's the I am statements, the ego I me, from Exodus. And he gives us this image of who this Jesus is that is here. He's the bread of life. He's the light of the world. He's the door of the sheep. He's the good shepherd. He's the resurrection and the life. He's the way, the truth, and the life. He says, I am the true vine. So what I want you to do this morning as we go through this, and it will be quick, what I want you to do is, with that word, he is here always, what does it look like for you, for him to be with you always as the bread of life? What does it look like for you to be, for Jesus to be with you always as the light of the world, or as the door, the good shepherd, the resurrection? Okay? So I won't be unpackaging them a lot, just a little bit, but I want you to be thinking through this. Okay, I get it that God is with me always, but this Jesus that we're talking about, what does this look like for us in real terms? Because we understand that as he is with us, who is it that's with us? Let's have a look at this. John chapter 6, and this is after he's fed the 5,000 men, so you add women and children on top of that. And he says in John 6, yes, I am the bread of life. Your ancestors ate the manna in the wilderness, but they all died. Anyone who eats of the bread from heaven, however, will never die. You see his play on words? Where did manna come from? Heaven. But it was earthly food. Where did he come? He came down from heaven. Next verse. I am the living bread that came down from heaven. Anyone who eats this bread will live forever. And this bread which I will offer to so the world may live is my flesh. So it's not talking about a loaf. And some of you are going to eat a fair bit over the next couple of days. It's not a bad thing necessarily. But when you get up the next day, what are you going to do? You're going to eat again. Why? Because you're hungry. The Israelites, as they were in the wilderness, and God would provide them bread from heaven, they called it manna, they'd have to go out each night and pick that up. And they would eat it. And then if they wanted food the next day, they had to go out that night and eat it again. Why? Because they would get hungry. And Jesus is using this play on words. But the bread that he's talking about is his own body. And what he would have to do to actually fulfill this is die. And as we would then take up his life through his death, we would then have his life within us. And we would no longer be hungry in a spiritual sense. Our hunger is simply for him. And so with the earthly manna and food that we might eat will not satisfy the needs of our souls. And whatever it is that you're feeding on today to fill that emptiness within you, if it's not Jesus Christ, it will not satisfy. Or you might have some fun along the way. The Bible talks about the pleasures of sin for a season, but it won't satisfy that your soul. And so if you're seeking it, Jesus describes himself as the bread of life. So as the bread of life, he is here always for us to have his spiritual sustenance. This bread that has come down from heaven. Not only the bread of life, he's also the light of the world. And this text is John 8:12. Jesus spoke to the people once more and said, I'm the light of the world. If you follow me, see there's condition. To experience his light, it's conditional upon if you follow him. I'm the light. If you follow me, you won't have to walk in darkness because you will have the light that leads to life. Any of you scared of the dark? Anyone? Not just anyone? No one's. First service, we had people that were brave enough to put their hand up and thank you and say, yeah, I'm scared of the dark. You know, we did a trip once up to the Gammon Ranges and we had one of our kids with us, and she had a couple of friends with us and a couple of families, and we went up to what was called Grendel's Hut, But previous to that, we'd been staying in an Aboriginal community where one of the Aboriginal elders was telling us the story about how that Grendel's hut years ago, there was a murder that took place and there was a ghost up there. And when growing up as a boy, when they would go stay at Grendel's hut, his dad would tie him and his three siblings together so that they couldn't be stolen by the ghost. So the Aboriginal elder is telling us this story, and the kids that we had with us are quite amped. They were edgy. Like, we're going to stay up just near this. And so during daylight hours, we went to have a look at the hut, Grendel's hut, and you open the door and it would just send shivers down. It was like, just big creak. And even in daylight hours, it was scary. So anyhow, that night I said, all right, because these weren't young children. I wasn't, you know, scaring young children, just to be sure. And I said, look, $20 on the table. You three girls go up there, sit in Grendel's hut, no torches on, and whoever sits there the longest, the $20 is yours. And I didn't get one taker. The $20 was mine. And the darkness and the story, it just, you know, life can be pretty scary, but also spiritual life. The Bible describes us that outside of Jesus Christ, we're in darkness. You notice the interesting thing when you go into a room at night time, you turn the light on, the darkness is gone. That's Jesus Christ. When he's with us always, he dispels darkness. He takes us out of darkness into his marvelous light. This imagery of when we come to Christ, who is the light of the world, that we not only have eternal life, he's the bread of life, but also we have the very light of God within us. That's important when we think of what we do with that down the track. I'll talk about that some more. He not only shows us how to live, but he draws us out of darkness. And it's like when you're in a dark place and you can see a place where there's light, that draws us. That's how Jesus Christ is in our world. That he draws us into his light. We better move on. He's also the door of the sheep. Now, we've got some folk in here that looked after sheep way more than what I have. But having spent 10 years up in northern Victoria, I saw enough sheep up there. And what the interesting thing about this setting is that the door for the sheep in ancient times, the real shepherd, the rigid shepherd, he would act as the door to the sheep. So instead of having some gate, he would lay in place of that door. And so anything that wanted to come in to attack the sheep had to get past them. That's where the hireling wasn't much value, because he was only paid labor. So if anything got too scary, the foxes and the wolves or whatever else, the robbers, the hireling would run away, but not the real shepherd. The real shepherd would put himself in the place of the door, and it says Jesus is the door, the shepherd, and he's the door. And it says in John 10 that he explained it to them, I tell you the truth, I am the gate for the sheep. All who come before me were thieves and robbers, but the true sheep did not listen to them. Yes, I am the gate. Those who come in through me will be saved. They will come and go freely and find good pasture. For me, there's an image of safety there. He's not just at the door. He is the door. We can come and go, and he is there. And does that ring any bells for you as far as a particular psalm where it has that same imagery? Good pastures, Psalm 23. The parallel image for this is the Good Shepherd. Same passage, I'm the Good Shepherd. The Good Shepherd lays down his life for the sheep. You see, this whole imagery of shepherdology, it was costly. He would give his life. These are costly words, as a Good Shepherd. And I was talking with John Hutch, actually. He shared here one time the story. Because he's a shepherd. He looks after sheep. He's one of our elders here for years. He's in our 9 o'clock service if you're visiting. And Johnny's got huge hands. He's a world-class shearer. And John shared in the 9 o'clock service that he really finds market day really hard. Because he's looked after this sheep And then they get carted off, and he feels like he's betraying them, because he's looked after them. And I said to John, "Just give me the lamb. I don't want to be emotionally involved." And his wife said, "Yeah, you think that's hard?" Said some of those lambs have been hand reared, and they know them by name. You see, this is similar to Jesus as the shepherd. And there's a passage elsewhere in the Bible there that he would leave the 99 that are safe and he'd go looking for the one that's lost. Such is the value of one human soul, not just the lost sheep, the same passage in Luke, as the lost coin and the lost son or the lost child. So much does your life matter to God that as the shepherd, he's looking for you today. He would give his life a ransom for you. And it is a safe place to come. That's why some of the stuff that we've read recently is just not who Jesus is and not who God is, not who the church represents. Because Jesus is the good shepherd and he looks out for your soul. He invites you to come. Not only is he the good shepherd, he's also the resurrection and the life. This is the passage where you have Lazarus. Remember, Lazarus has died. Jesus goes there. He says, "I am the resurrection, the life. Anyone who believes in me will live even after dying." That's got to be comforting, isn't it? You see, this tent, which the term Paul uses, which is our body, will eventually come to it. It'll have its day. Some are closer than others, but it will have its day. And after death, if we know the resurrection and the life, which is Jesus Christ, then we will have eternal life. And eternal life actually begins the point you trust in Christ. This is the kingdom ministry of God. Everyone who lives in me and believes in me will never ever die spiritually, because he's made you alive. Physically you will. Do you believe this, Martha? Do you believe this? Because for Jesus to be here always means that we can know the resurrection and the life. And just to prove this, God got up. Jesus was resurrected from the dead. There's a passage we're looking at, he is here. Remember when they went and visited the tomb and the angel said, "He is not here." Why? Because he was raised from the dead. I remember when we visited Portugal earlier this year, we were in a taxi going to where we were staying, and there's a lady who actually wasn't a taxi, it was our Airbnb person, and she was talking about where we might be visiting in Lisbon, and all these different places, and there were different particular religious sites that she wanted us to visit, because everyone goes there. And I said, "Well, why would you go there?" And she's talking all about Mary and Mary and Mary, and us. And I'm sitting in the front seat, and my brother and Robin and my sister-in-law are in the back seat. They all of a sudden went quiet, because I was the pastor. I'm sitting in the front seat, so I was supposed to continue the dialogue. And so, because what I wanted to do is I wanted to move sort of from this religious stuff to actually turn it and begin to talk about Jesus. So we began to do that, and we're talking about what it is to follow Jesus and about the claims that Jesus made, and then Jesus claimed to be the resurrection and the life and these things. And she was so pleased when we arrived at our destination. Having to sit in the front seat with a Baptist pastor for that long, she was about done. But this was the claim of Christ. And so that we can have confidence today and always in the resurrection and the life. And final one, two to go. I'm the way, the truth, and the life. Fits in with so many of the others, this exclusive claim that Jesus made. He told him, this is a passage from John 14 where he says, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God. Believe also in me. In my Father's are many mansions." And Jesus said in verse 6, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one can come to the Father except through me." You see, Jesus is exclusive, which doesn't go down really well today. But this was his claim. And again, he verified and ratified this claim by being raised from the dead. We can have confidence that Jesus is the way to God because his sacrifice was a perfect sacrifice. He took on flesh, but not sin until he died. And then it wasn't his sin that he took on. It was your sin and my sin. And Peter, who was a follower of Jesus, said these words, "He," that's Jesus, "committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth." You see, that's the only way that he could be the way, the truth, and the life. If you opted to say those words, someone would be able to point the finger at you and say, "Oh, look, I've heard him speak," or "I know what they did over there." You see, we've got checkered lives. Well, I wouldn't say all of us, but we'll probably do. See, if you made this claim, someone would be able to say, "Yeah, but they're not perfect people. How can somebody who is not perfect be the way, the truth, and the life?" Same with any faiths or religions. Because in our humanity impairs us with sin, and sin separates us from God. But the only time Jesus was separated from his Father was on the cross, where your sin became his. And he took our sin upon himself. And at that point was forsaken by the Father. And he bore our sin, Peter tells us. Not only is he the way, truth, and life, he's also the vine. John 15, you can read the passage. "I'm the true grapevine. You're the branches, those who remain in me and I in them." Remain is the idea of abide. "Will produce much fruit, for apart from me you can do what? Nothing." This is a great one. When you think about he is here always, we have the very life and power of God flowing through our veins. And vine at home. Fig tree at home. And it's sort of growing and it's getting up there and it's got two figs on it. We're stoked. We love figs in our house. So we sort of find fig trees so that we can plunder and pillage. But we've only got two. And the fig, these two little figs are flow out of the growth of the vine, the tree that is there. And so we are like that. Jesus is the vine. And when we have faith in God, when we're followers of Jesus, we have God's power and strength within us to produce fruit. What is that fruit? It could be all sorts of things, but primarily in the context of that, the idea is Christ-likeness. God wants us to be like Christ, and the only way that we can be that is when we have him within us. And connected and abiding in the vine. We talk more, but I'll stop there. There's seven I ams. He is here always. What I want you to do is just take a minute or two. And I want you to think about, what does that look like for me? I am the bread of life. Maybe you're feeding on other things to feed your spiritual soul and you need to turn to Jesus Christ today and say, I just want to trust you. I need your life in me, your bread, your body, in your sacrifice, and I just need your forgiveness. That might be the way the bread of life speaks to you today. Or any of these, the light. God, I'm sick of walking in darkness. Lift the load of the guilt of my sin and shame. Grant me your forgiveness. The door. What it is to know he is there. Protecting. The good shepherd. The resurrection life. I want you to think through some of those. Just for a moment. What is it that God's saying to you? That you take those and apply to your own life. And as you do that, there's a story about a man in Nigeria, true story, read it, and his name Zeal. You see, the thing is that this whole series is not just about us. Jesus came into the world to bring to fulfill the redemptive plan of God. He came into the world to fulfill the redemptive plan of God. If we have God within us, then we can know what it's like to be with Him in the valley, in the wilderness, in the storm, and always. We can know that in our experience, but it's not just about us. He wants to redeem the world to Himself. So how is it that we can be bread, light, door, shepherd, resurrection? How can we bring these I Ams to the families and to the communities and to the workplaces and to the universities and the schools where we spend our week? Because Christ came not just for us, but for the world. And the redemptive plan of God is fulfilled as we understand the I Ams in our lives always, and then seek to bring that to the world that we live in. Nigeria, where there's not much hospital care and even less health programs and health insurance, is a guy called Zeal. And he's a believer, he's a follower of Jesus, and he's also pretty well healed. He drives a Mercedes, and he goes to hospitals where people have been admitted to the hospital, but the hospital won't release them until they pay their medical bill. And when he gets to the hospital, he gets out of the car and the social workers come to him and they've got a clipboard and he says, "Show me your list." And he goes through the list and begins to walk through the hospital and meet people. And then he says to them, "Tell me your story." And so he'll meet someone who was shot at, and said, "Who shot at you?" He didn't know, and he was wounded. He's now well, and he's sitting there. The hospital won't release him, and so he paid his account. Next for bed, paid his account. Next bed, and on he goes. He's referred to as the angel. And you know, the thing that he's doing there is just this. He's not happy to sit back and say, "I know Jesus is the light of the world." What he said is, "I'm actually going to bring some of that light to some other people." He's not only happy to experience the bread of life, but he's actually wanting to feed the soul and the hunger of those around him. And that's something for us to take away this Christmas.